People divide traditional Jewish learning, as opposed to, let's say, Kabbalah, into four areas. You have Tanakh, Torah Sheba'al Peh, Halakha, and philosophy, Machshevet Yisrael, Hashkafa, different terms are used. But within the world of philosophy, there are different things that people focus on. I would say in the Middle Ages, the focus of Jewish philosophy was on understanding God, understanding the nature of God, understanding the way God interacts with the world. Maybe a good example of this is the way the Rambam opens even his halachic work, right, Mishneh Torah. If you look here at the first page, very famous opening words to Hilchot Yesod HaTorah, the Rambam says, Yesod HaYesodot V'Amud HaChokhmah, that the root of everything is Leida She'yesham Matzui Rishon. It's to know the nature of the first principle. The Rambam understood that's a mitzvah. Right? Anochi Hashem Elokecha means understanding the nature of God. And that's what most of the works in the Middle Ages were about. Now, the move to modernity, which focuses more on man's reality, right? Existentialist philosophy is about the nature of man's existence. Right? So the transitions were moving the discussions from the nature of God to the nature of man's existence and what's expected from man. And you had this in relation to the different types of philosophy. For example, we mentioned the medieval rational philosophy of the Rambam, Rav Sadia Gaon, which was about the nature of God from a rational perspective. You also had in the Middle Ages, Kabbalah is the nature of God from a mystical perspective. All these philosophies were translated into, or were applied to, what it all means for man. For example, Chassidut. Chassidut took Kabbalah, it's based on Kabbalah, but instead of focusing on the nature of the Bechinot, and the Sfirot in Shemayim, the purpose of Chassidut was to talk about what all that means for man, for man's reality, man's life. Chassidut is the application of Kabbalah to the reality of man. And you find the same thing regarding rational philosophy as well, whether it's of Soloveitchik or any other slew of other people, across the board of Jewish philosophers, is taking rational philosophy and not talking about what it means about the nature of God's existence is one, two, physical, not physical, but about what all this means for man. A Soloveitchik is about the nature of man's existence, the lonely man of faith, halachic man. Again, it's based on the rational Misora of the Rambam, Rav Sadia Gaon, and others, but it's applied to the reality of man. And a good way to see this is by looking at Mesiyat Yesharim, which is the turn from the Rishonim to the Acharonim, and it's clear that what lies in the back of his mind is the formulation of the Rambam, but he's taking it in a very different direction. We're on page 1. Yesod ha-chassidut v'shoresh ha-avodah tmima. Yesod ha-chassidut v'shoresh ha-avodah tmima. Hu she-yitbarer v'yitameit etel ha-adam ma-chovato ba-olamo. Right? The root of not the yesodot, but yesod ha-chassidut v'shoresh ha-avodah tmima. What he's talking about is not, right, yesodot of philosophy and chokhmah. He's talking about chassidut and avodah, the avodah of man, is for man to know macho v'tobo olamo. Just to finish this important sentence, v'lema tzarich sheyasim mabato u'megamato v'chol asher hu amel kol yumei chayav. But there's two stages here. Number one, a person should understand what his responsibility is. Macho v'tobo olamo. That's a general statement. And then in particular, what should his goal, right, his mabat, what should it be on? What his megama, what his purpose should be for all of his work? So, if you look for a Hebrew term to summarize what Jewish philosophy becomes in modern times, really this Mesiyat Yesharim can summarize it very well. Chovato, chovat ha'adam ba'olamo. Chovat u'magamat ha'adam ba'olamo. Because the truth is that I think one of the major changes in the 19th and particularly the 20th century was to talk about not only man's responsibilities, but man's goals, man's purpose. Now, of course, Judaism always begins with responsibilities. But it's legitimate to talk also about the purpose of existence. So there's the responsibility, and there's the purpose. Now again, there's nothing that makes this study of philosophy more valuable than the other areas of philosophy. I just think it's what man is more occupied with in our days. And I think, again, it could be because of the nature of what we think about, but objectively, it seems like it's more important. Why is it more important? Because what's more important, to understand the nature of God or to understand what's expected of me? And maybe just as a modern man, I think we would all answer the latter. So again, Jewish philosophy can easily deal completely only with the question of God's existence. But there's a whole other area which is about what does God expect from me? So you could call this class What God Expects From Me. You could call this class Chovat Umegamat Adam Bolamo. Or you could call it Hashkafa 101. Because when we talk about Hashkafa, the term is very often used to mean what should man's outlook be. Again, not what should man's understanding of God be. What should his outlook on his life and his world be? Now, just to clarify, we're not talking here about how the Gula is going to come and what Mashiach is going to be like and what the nature of God is and Hashkacha Pratis or not. What we're talking about is what God expects. What is the mission? What does God expect from man? Now, I would say there's two kinds of areas in this discussion. One is what everyone agrees to. You know, sadly, when we discuss Hashkafa, we generally highlight the areas in which we differ from other people. Whatever the we and the other is. It's not always Haredi, Marotrax, whatever. Some people are always defining themselves as opposed to everyone else they meet. So the we and they always changes. Right? But the bulk of Jewish philosophy, when you talk about Hashkafa, when you talk about what we believe God expects from us, everyone agrees on. Meaning all God-fearing, religious, observant people agree on. That could be people don't formulate it, people don't highlight it, people don't live it, but the principles are the same. Now clearly there are areas where there is debate. There are many areas of debate. Both those areas need to be studied. What does God expect from us? Obviously a large amount of what we're going to be learning is not my chiddush. It could be my chiddush to show you where it is and where it comes from, but it's not my chiddush. In certain areas are areas that are more under debate, and I'm happy to talk about it when we go through it. Now, the unfortunate part of Hashkafa is, as I was mentioning the other day, I find that when it's taught, when it's discussed, it's A, not really taught in a formalized, orderly curriculum fashion, and for sure, when it's taught, it isn't taught with clear sources. Meaning Hashkafa is generally not a shir. It could be a sicha, it could be a rambling, it could be a musr shmuz, it could be, but it definitely isn't, or generally isn't. In fact, when I started to put together this choveret, I really couldn't find any other book or choveret that collected sources. And people tell you what they believe, but when you get into Hashkafa, especially when there's a debate, so you know what they believe, but where does it come from? Why do they believe it? Why is it right? Why is it wrong? What's the basis of the conversation? What's the basis of the debate? That's what the purpose of this is all about. To go from the beginning, to see where it comes from, where it goes. And if you look here at pages 2, 3, 4, you see here a basic table of contents. Now, I have to warn that I've kind of updated this booklet a lot since it was first printed. I'm constantly coming up with new ideas and new sources. I'll mention them as we go along. And therefore, I'm very eager people can make suggestions of topics I think should be here, of sources on the topics being discussed that should be added. So we're almost up to a new printing. We're almost up. Not yet. Everyone here is helping us get to the new printing. And anyone who wants to get a new printing, once it's printed, I'm welcome. I'm happy to give it to you. I'm just saying that we're working on getting there. So I think this is a very important thing. And any educator, teacher, rabbi I show it to is always saying, oh, but this is very important. Very important to put it together to learn it. Okay, questions about it. So we were going to say the table of contents. If you look here, the table of contents kind of has four parts. Part one is studying Svarim, Bereshit, and Shemot, which are very important because they don't have mitzvot. Meaning, Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Dvarim, particularly Vayikra and Dvarim, are Svarim, which speak at length about what God expects from us in detail. God expects from us to take off Trumot and Maisrot, and to bring Karbanot, and to keep Shabbat. And again, when you ask, what does God expect from me? You say, well, 613 mitzvot. But as we'll see, God expects much more than that. The mitzvot are part of a broader approach to life. You can have a person who's meticulous and mitzvah observant, but isn't a real Eved Hashem. You can't have the opposite. A person who likes God but doesn't serve Him the way God asks to be served, so that isn't an Eved Hashem. It's a person who thinks they're an Eved Hashem. So Bereshit and Shemot are important because there are no mitzvot. So clearly they're coming to help us appreciate the broader themes beyond the particular mitzvot that are mandated in later Svarim. And in Bereshit and Shemot, we'll talk about four different things. Number one, what we're meant to learn from the creation of the world, and I think we're meant to learn a lot from that. Number two, what we're meant to learn from the lives of the Avot, Who are they? Why were they chosen? What are they models of? Number three, on page three, what are the lessons of Yetziat Mitzrayim? And again, I'm not talking about how many miracles were there, how many miracles were on the Yam Suf. I'm talking about what we are meant to learn from that experience. Not that those other things aren't important. Let me put it in perspective. And Har Sinai, what we're meant to learn from Har Sinai. And on page four, part two, is about the content and nature of the commitment in detail, mitzvot being central, but other ideas as well. Parts three and four are particular questions of Hashkafa, which more debated than Aleph and Bet. Gimel, what should a Jew's approach be to the world around him? Learning from the world, learning from other people, contributing, maintaining the world. What should, you know, are we expected to do that? Is it good? Is it bad? And finally, number four, on page four, if you have all these important values, what should a person's division of time look like? Especially, this is a central question for modern Orthodox people, if it means believing in more things than just Talmud Torah. Now, the question of how you apportion your time is a very, very significant issue. So those are the four parts here. And we'll do what we'll do. I said we'll start from the beginning. We'll see how it's going. Maybe people want to skip. They want to do other things. We can talk about it as we go along. So in general, dinner is at 6 o'clock. And it's not out there. Right in the Chadar Ochel, it takes about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, half an hour. So we didn't want to take away too much from Seder. That's a nice beginning for Seder. Me and Ora are taking turns. I'm teaching on Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, and she's teaching on Monday, Wednesday at 6:45. If there's a special circumstance like today, we'll start a little later. But, you know, let us know. We don't want people to miss out on things that are going on. So it'll be 6:45 to 7:30. Then from 7:30 to 9:30, even those who go to Shiurim have time to learn at their own Seder, with their own Chavrutot. And then from 9:30 to 10:50, for those interested, there's another Shiur. At 10:15, we'll daven Arvit, and after Marv, those who want to learn later, want to go to a Shiur, there's a Shiur available then too. Okay, any questions about the bigger picture? Should we get started with this? Okay, so let's go. The first of the 13 principles of faith is Ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima sh'ha-borei yitbarach shemo hu borei u'manhig l'chol ha-bruim v'hu levado asa v'oseh v'yaseh l'chol ha-ma'asim. What is this belief? Summarize. There's a lot here. Very verbose. It's the belief that God is what? Or did what?
Creation.
What?
Creation.
God created the world. The belief in God as creator. What's interesting is that it doesn't say that God created the world. It says that God creates the world. Hu bore. And not only that he creates, but that he guides. When we talk about God as creator, it means more than just some historical fact that you might see on the History Channel, right? It has implications for the way the world continues to exist. Hu levado asa ve'oseh ve'yaseh l'chol ha'ma'asim. And he's behind the things that consistently happen. Happen, and will happen. And this is the belief in God as creator in the broadest sense of the word. Again, this is what we're meant to learn from the Torah's presentation of Perek Aleph of creation, and why it presents it in the first place. I don't know if we ever thought about this. Why does the Torah go through the details of the creation of the world? Is it so that we'll understand how the world was created? Clearly not, because it doesn't really tell us how. It just says, God said this, and God said this, and God said this, and this was created. And I think there are other things we're meant to learn from that narrative, about the relationship between the different parts of creation, which we'll talk about a little bit later, particularly man, the most important thing for us. But the base level is, if God creates, that has implications for how the world continues to exist. And this you see from the very first Rashi, in a very particular context, but developed by Chazal in many other contexts in the broader sense of the word. But everyone's familiar with the Rashi on Bereshit bara Elokim et haShamayim ve'et haAretz, right? Quotes from Yitzchak in the Medrash, who says that the Torah should have begun with the first mitzvot, with the Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. Why does it begin with the story of creation? Who cares? What are we meant to learn from this? So Rashi says, because one day the Goyim will come to the Jews and say, you're thieves, you've stolen our land. You know that, right?
You stole my land.
Okay, so you say you stole my land? So the answer is given here. Hey, momim lahem, kol ha'aretz shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hu bra unitana la'asher yashar b'einav. God is creator. His ball, his rules, he creates the land, and therefore he has the right to give it to who he pleases. Now, I don't think you can fully appreciate this Rashi without remembering the historical context in which Rashi lived. When did Rashi live?
10:30 to 11:00.